Cool. So Acts 17, starting at verse 16. While Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day with those who happened to be there. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him. Some of them asked, "What is this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Then they took him and brought him to a meeting of the Areopagus, where they said to him, "May we know that this new teaching is that you are presenting. You are bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we would like to know what they mean." All the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there spent a long time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. Paul then stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, "People of Athens, I see then every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To an unknown God.' So you are ignorant of the very thing that you worship, and this is what I am going to proclaim to you. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in temples built by human hands. And he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything. Rather, he gives himself everyone life and breath and everything else. From one man, he made all the nations so that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out and find him, though he is not far from any one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. As some of you, your own poets have said, we are his own offspring. Therefore, since we are God's offspring, we should not think about the divine being that is like gold or silver or stone, an image made by human design and skill. In the past, God overlooked such ignorance, but now he commands all people everywhere to repent. For he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice and by the man he has appointed. He has given proof of this to everyone by raising him from the dead. And when they heard about the resurrection of the dead, some of them sneered, but others said, 'We want to hear about this again on this subject.' At that, Paul left the council. Some of the people became followers of Paul and believed." This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Callum. Awesome. This is a really awesome passage. I'm really excited to share my thoughts on it. So when I first kind of started reading this passage, the first thing that stood out to me was verse 23, which says, "For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To an unknown God.' So you are ignorant of the very thing that you worship, and this is what I'm going to proclaim to you." The bit that really stood out to me in that verse was the words, "an unknown God." They were worshiping an unknown God. They did not know who they were worshiping. And it just reminded me of the joy that we have of being able to worship a God who is known to us. We worship a known God who also knows us personally. And that's what I kind of want to focus on tonight. Three things: that we worship a known God, we worship a God who knows us, and that we worship a God that we should long for others to know as well. So firstly, we worship a known God who's been made known to us. And is he fully known? Absolutely not. In fact, I think sometimes I find I don't feel like I know him sometimes, and sometimes God can seem so unknown. And I've been through times where, over the past few years, even this year, where God has felt unknown and unfamiliar to me, and I haven't recognized him or recognized his voice. And there have been times sometimes when I've doubted whether I do know him at all. And these times are really hard, but because of Jesus, we can know God. God has been made known to us. And we're never going to fully know him in this lifetime, but we can always get to know more about him, and we can always get to know him more. 1 Corinthians 13 says, "For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall fully know, even as I am fully known." And we each have, we each know God in completely unique ways. We each have completely different and unique relationships with him. We each have our own testimonies and stories of what God has done in our lives. And we each have different life experiences which shape and mold how we know God and shape how our relationship with him goes. In John 9, Jesus describes himself as the gate. He is the gate or the door to the Father. The door to knowing God is to know Jesus. And in the same passage, Jesus also calls himself the good shepherd. He says, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. Last week, Callum was speaking on listening to God and how important it is to listen to him and recognize his voice. And part of knowing God is learning to recognize his voice and learning to recognize it as him. So because of Jesus, we don't worship an unknown God, but a known God. Because to know Jesus is to know God. In verse 20 of the Message version, it says, the unknown is now known. After Paul sees the way that people are living in Athens, he longs to introduce them to the God that he knows. He longs to make the unknown known. And his description of God that we just heard Callum say, which I'm just going to read again, is beautiful. He says, the God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in temples built by human hands. And he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything. Rather, he himself gives everyone life and breath and everything else. From one man, he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from any one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. For in him we live and move and have our being. This is the God that we know, the God that's been made known to us. But at the same time, the God that can seem so unknown as well. But when God seems so distant and unknown to us, what is it that makes him any different from the unknown gods and the idols that were worshipped in this passage? What makes him different is the fact that the God that we know also knows us. He knows us personally. And that's the second point that I want to make, that we know a God who knows us. But unlike our knowledge of him, he knows us fully and completely. And even when he knows everything about us, he loves us. J.I. Packer says, what matters supremely, therefore, is not in the last analysis the fact that I know God, but the larger fact which underlies it, the fact that he knows me. I remember my sister saying to me a few years back when I was at my first year here at Brooks Uni, and she had just moved out to Uganda for a few years. And she said to me that being known is one of the most important things in life. We were both struggling with being in completely new and unfamiliar places, where we didn't know people and people didn't know us. Maybe you can think back to your first few days of uni or your first few days here in Oxford. And how it felt to be in such a completely unknown place. Walking into places such as church or uni that are full of people and feeling completely unknown is a really hard thing. I think the importance of being known is sometimes undervalued, and the importance of being known by name even more so. But as it says in verse 28, we are God's offspring. We are his children. He knows us, and he knows us by name. One of my favorite stories in the Bible is in John 20, when Jesus appears to Mary Magdalene after he's been raised from the dead. And Mary goes to the tomb to find Jesus, and he's not there. He's risen, and Jesus appears to her. He's standing in front of her and talking to her, but she doesn't recognize who he is. She thinks he's the gardener, even though he's right there in front of her. And it's not until Jesus says her name, it's not until he says Mary, that she recognizes and knows who he is. My oldest sister's name is Mary, and in the front of her Bible, on the front page in big letters, she has written, Jesus said to her, Mary. And we aren't all lucky enough to have that name, but I know for my sister it was a real game changer for her relationship with God, to know that God was calling her by name. And he calls all of us by name. Isaiah 43 says, I have summoned you by name, and you are mine. So we worship a known God, and a God who knows us personally. And we also worship a God that we should long for others to know. We should long, like Paul did in this passage, to make the unknown known. Verse 16 says, while Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see the city was full of idols. The King James Version says, his spirit was stirred within him when he saw the city was wholly given to idolatry. And we too should be greatly distressed. Our spirits should be stirred within us when we see people worshipping unknown gods. When we see people who are wholly given to idolatry, and when we see people who don't recognize God. Leo Tolstoy says, it is terrible when people do not know God. But it is worse when people identify as God what is not God. A few weeks ago, the interns were in Israel on our mission trip, and we went to a place called Tel Dan, which is, yeah, belonged to the tribe of Dan, and you can see, read in 1 Kings, is where they built and worshipped a golden calf. And we sat in this place where these golden calves, these idols, had been worshipped, and we sang worship to God. And it was incredibly powerful to be in a place where people had chosen to turn away from God, where people had chosen to turn their back on God and turn from worshipping a known God to worshipping unknown gods. And although worshipping a golden calf doesn't quite apply to us today, it was a reminder of the many idols that are worshipped today, of money and technology and relationships and academia. Galatians 4 says, formerly, when you did not know God, you are slaves to those who by nature are not gods. But now that you know God, or rather are known by God, how is it that you are turning your back to those weak and miserable forces? Do you wish to be enslaved by them all over again? Once we know God, we can enter into this freedom. And we should long for others to enter into that freedom that we have. Our hearts should break for those who don't know God, for those who don't recognize him, and for those who identify as God, what is not God. My older brother doesn't know God, and I pray every day for him, and I have for many years, that he would come to know God as his father, and that he would recognize him again. And I pray that God would never stop calling his name. But for a long time, I was angry at God, angry that God was not revealing himself to my brother, and my prayers were, prayers of frustration and anger, prayers of, why? Why, God, are you letting him walk away? Why aren't you running after him? Why are you letting him turn his back on you? And I was reminded, actually when watching a film the other year, of the reality of God's children not recognizing him. And the fact that it breaks his heart so much more than it does ours. And that's just something that I'd forgotten. And the film, I was going to show a clip of this film, but it's not working, so I'm going to try and describe it as best I can. So the film was A Little Princess, which if you haven't watched, watch it. It's fantastic. So I grew up watching this a lot with my sisters, and it wasn't until I watched it for the first time in a long time the other year that God just really spoke to me through the final scene. Wait, let me just describe one more thing, and then you can play it. Yes, this is great. Okay, so basically in the film, there's a young girl named Sarah. That's her. And her father goes away to war, and she ends up living in an orphanage. And while she's at war, Sarah's father is injured. And Sarah's told that he has died. And he hasn't died, but his injuries are so extreme that He's lost all memory, and he's lost all memory of his life prior to that. And when he finally returns home, he has no memory of who his daughter is. And this scene that we're just going to watch in a minute is where Sarah comes across her father, and it's a bit emotional, but go with it. And I think God just spoke to me through it in a way of, so I saw Sarah's reaction, so the young girl's reaction to her father not recognizing her, as God's reaction to his children when they don't recognize him. So just kind of bear that in mind when you watch the film, because it is fantastic, please. I think I saw this clip the other year, and I was just, I just saw Sarah's reaction to her dad not recognizing her as God's reaction when his children don't recognize him. And instead of him being I think I had this picture of him when I was praying for my brother, of him just kind of walking away and not doing anything. And then I saw this film, and I was like, wait a minute, God is the one who is on his knees shouting, it's me, don't you remember? Don't you remember me? Don't you remember this and this and this? He's the one who's screaming, please, you've got to remember me. And the relief and the overwhelming joy that God must feel when his children remember who he is, and they run towards him and they shout his name. God longs more than anything for his children to recognize him. And our hearts should long as well for those around us to know God, to remember their father, and to turn from worshiping unknown gods to worshiping a known God. Isaiah 43 says, you are my witnesses, declares the Lord, and my servant whom I have chosen, so that you may know and believe me and understand that I am he. Before me, no God was formed, nor will there be one after me. I am the Lord, and apart from me, there is no savior. I have revealed and saved and proclaimed, I, and not some foreign God among you. You are my witnesses, declares the Lord, that I am God. We are all God's witnesses, and we have been chosen to be his witnesses. It's a sense of being. It's who we're called to be. And again, I say this, but it is so hard. It really is hard. And I think my heart breaks for my brother that he doesn't know God. Yet talking to him about it is so frustratingly hard. So often have I run away from opportunities to speak to him about it. So often have I changed the subject or missed an opportunity to tell him about God when it's been right there. Just because, I don't even know, because I'm afraid of what he's going to think or say, because he's my big brother who I can't tell what to do. I don't even know what it is, but I just find it so hard. But verse 23 says, when they heard about the resurrection of the dead, some of them sneered, but others said, we want to hear more. We want to hear more about this. And some people are going to sneer. Some people aren't going to want to hear about it. Some people are going to laugh or walk away. But some people might want to hear more about who God is. Some people might want to hear more. And isn't that worth the risk? And this passage also shows us that people have a desire to worship God, this kind of innate ability to worship, and they just need somebody to introduce him to them. I often pray that God would break my heart more for people who don't know him. That I wouldn't become passive or immune to the fact that I do have so many brothers and sisters who have not yet come home. And this is something that we can ask God for. Maybe tonight you might want to ask God to break your heart for those who don't know him, to give you a real desire to make the unknown known. And if this is you, we'd really love to pray with you about that. So to summarize, we have a God who has been made known to us through Jesus, so that we can have a personal and intimate relationship with him. We have a God who knows us deeply and completely and still loves us. And we know a God who we should long for others to know as well. We should long to make the unknown known. And as we go into our small groups now, I just encourage you to think about these three things and think about maybe which one relates to you most at the moment. Maybe it's that you long to make the unknown known and this is something you find really hard. Or that you want God to really break your heart for those who don't know him. Maybe it's the fact that God knows you completely. He knows everything about you and he still loves you. Maybe that's an idea that you struggle with. Or maybe it's simply knowing God that is hard at the moment. And if I'm honest, that's something that I'm struggling with at the moment. Maybe God seems distant or unfamiliar. And you just want to know more of who he is, or you want him to remind you of who he is. And all of these things are perfectly okay to feel. And I just encourage you to think about them and pray about them, and maybe pray with someone about that tonight. So I was going to finish with a quote from Tim Keller, which says, to be loved but not known is comforting but superficial. To be known and not loved is our greatest fear. But to be fully known and truly loved is, well, a lot like being loved by God. It is what we need more than anything. It liberates us from pretense, humbles us out of our self-righteousness, and fortifies us for any difficulty life can throw at us. Amen.